ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am back. After a week of vacation, I have decided to return to the show and push Chad to number two. Hi, Chad.
How are you doing?
Wow, I thought it was a partnership.
How about like a co-number one? I did an awesome job on this
you
show
did. You
last
know what?
Week.
So
as did Hannah.
So as when the episode went live, I downloaded it first thing in the morning, and it was great. It was really good. I liked it. So you guys did an awesome job. And I got to give Chad kudos. You did a incredible job doing that intro. So,
you know, I tried to match your level of enthusiasm and energy. I might have overshot a little bit.
We have a great show in store for you guys, and we're going to be talking about a really awesome and recent movie, but we are not alone. We got returning guests and host of Video Game Bang, Corey Vincent, and the real David Webb.
What's going on, everybody?
Hey!
How you guys doing? Kind of bunched you guys together there, but you know how it is with time and whatnot.
I think Chad wouldn't have done that if he was hosting.
You know what?
Or Hannah, for that matter.
You know, then you can go live with your mother. Wait.
Wow, can unpack that later.
That
wow.
took a weird turn.
That's... Yeah.
So 1 year in, and the Filmlosophers still manages to be presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live at VGB Studios. Don't be afraid to regenerate your movie knowledge every week. Subscribing to the Filmlosophers is free, and new episodes are available on a plethora of platforms, including Audioboom, iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Stitcher, and Player FM. Like Adamantium, our appreciation for Filmlosa fans is unbreakable, so be sure to connect with us on social media. Like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/Filmlosophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Filmlosophy101 to chat about movie news throughout the week and throw in your 2 cents about the latest review. Finally, to access all of the amazing podcasts from VGB Studios, visit our website at vgbstudios.com. There you'll find the entire episode library for the Filmlosophers, Video Game Bang, and me, Mike, Self, and I. We got a great show in store for you. We're actually going to be talking about Logan. Now, for most people who don't know, Logan just debuted this past weekend, and it actually made its way into theaters after...
Made a boatload of money.
That is also true. But it's been like highly anticipated as, you know, this film that's going to be the end-all for this particular character. And the great thing is that we all actually, at different theaters, mind you, we all actually saw the film on Thursday. And, you know, it was incredible. It was really good. Just a little synopsis. In the near future, a weary Logan cares for an ailing Professor X in a hideout on the Mexican border. But Logan's attempts to hide from the world and his legacy are upended when a young mutant arrives being pursued by dark forces. Yeah, that's really
literally
heavy.
Like Black Ops forces, like dark with metal arms.
Metal arms.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not cryptic at all.
You know, you gotta have a lot of metal. It's a Wolverine movie. You gotta have metal all over the place.
Directed by James Mangold. So if you're unfamiliar, James Mangold is actually the guy who directed the previous...
The Wolverine.
The previous iteration with where he was in Japan and whatnot. But directed by James Mangold, Logan stars Hugh Jackman, Patrick Stewart, Daphne Keene, Stephen Merchant, and Boyd Holbrook. And the film marks the second R-rated comic book film after last year's Deadpool. So Mangold, like we said... also directed the previous one, but this also marks the final on-screen appearance of Hugh Jackman as Wolverine after portraying the role for over 17 years. That is
considerable.
That's job security
years,
right
that
there.
That's a lot.
That's a long time.
That is like super job security right there. Like if you were to ever want a job, you'd be an actor and just say, hey, I can do this really well, and then keep that job for God knows how long.
Yeah, I mean, and you don't have like, I mean... James Bond has more movies and a longer, you know, lifespan on film, but not with a single performer in the role.
True. Yeah. Wolverine doesn't really rotate like that.
Yeah, no.
I don't think I've ever.
Not to this point.
Not to, yeah.
You know, now we'll see.
So the great thing is that having the panel of the people that we have here on today, between David Webb and Corey Vincent and Chad Riley and myself, we're all just huge comic book nerds. We love to read them. We love to learn more about them. We watch YouTube videos about it. Me and Webb were just talking about it the other day, about a couple of YouTube channels that just talk nothing but comic books all day long. And so I think with this group of people, I think we can really kind of digest exactly what the film was all about and really explain it to the people, you know? Just really...
Power to the people.
Exactly.
Give you the power to understand this movie.
So it's funny because I've told Corey this a couple times, and I don't mean it in a negative light. I just, I say it as a badge of honor for the man. I know he can sometimes be a little critical of movies before going in. And it's something I've always admired about him, because when he looks at a film, he kind of sees, you know what, it's kind of cut and dry for him. It's like, ah, I don't like it. Or, ah, it looks okay. And so I was actually interested in how he was going to perceive the film, because going in, just seeing the trailers, what were your initial reactions to those guys, both of them?
I wasn't too hype on the trailers. I thought the trailers were kind of boring. I thought it was very reminiscent of Last of Us, the video game.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't really show a lot to get me interested. It just seemed like the same story I'd seen before. And at the time, I think they were drawing too many comparisons to the comic book Old Man Logan.
Mm.
So when I was going into watching the trailers, I was expecting more along those lines. And so when I saw what they actually offered to the plate, it was so off that it was actually off-putting.
Mm-hmm.
That said, like what you said, I'm not hypercritical. There's a reason that I don't critique movies, that I do video games. It's because generally, if I sit in front of a movie, I'll like it. Unfortunately, I'm not like a huge critic.
Unfortunately,
yeah, I can't critic. I can't.
They'll win me over after 2 hours.
I've made short films for many years, and I know how hard it is to make stupid little YouTube videos. So I have a respect for people, what people do in the movie industry. So when I see a movie, I'm like, wow, that's really cool, generally. But the things I love the most, I critique the hardest, if that makes sense.
Sure. No, yeah, it's true.
So you just happen to see me a lot of movies with me of things that I feel really strongly about, and then I critique the hell out of them. This one, I was able to separate myself and go in completely blank slate. I'm not assuming this is going to be Old Man Logan page for page. Let's just see what happens.
Which, for anybody who is familiar with the story in the comics, I mean, it had to have been compelling. I thought it was interesting because, like you said, there was, even before any trailers, even before any filming had been done, they basically telegraphed Old Man Logan, Hugh Jackman himself, I believe, at Comic-Con, right? Like,
yeah.
Pretty much said, yeah, it's going to be, you know, I'm not saying, but I'm saying Old Man Logan, which is rights-wise impossible because
yeah.
Hawkeye's tied up. Hulk is tied up. All these other elements that are part of that
Red
story
Skull
in the comics.
Isn't a part of it anymore. And,
you know,
yeah.
Those are, Fox doesn't have any access to those characters. So right from the get go, it was a big question mark of, okay, but how?
Yeah.
How are you going to do that? Because basically nothing other than Logan himself is in Fox's possession to work with in the movie.
And it's a scary thing because you take a look at Fox's track record in terms of a lot of, you know, what they've done and what they haven't done with the films. And seeing as how the Wolverine Origins went, that was a mess. That was total garbage. I'm not going to lie.
I wish I could say it was forgettable, but really you can't help but remember how terrible it was.
They sewed Deadpool's mouth shut. Like that for is like, why? He's the merc with the mouth, and you take away the, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
And then they give him the Roger Rabbit claws in that one too.
Yeah,
where it's like super cartoony, and it's so you see what this company has done with previous, you know, properties. So it's kind of a crapshoot when we just had something like that similar done at a Comic-Con with Batman versus Superman. I say it every time we talk about it. I was fooled into thinking that it was going to be a legitimate, you know, BVS kind of Dark Knight Returns kind of deal when they did that line at Comic-Con and they announced it. And then we got what we got last year, and it wasn't exactly that. So same kind of concept here. I was a little worried coming in. I did like the trailers mostly because of the music. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
who doesn't like Johnny Cash?
They did a great job.
Yeah.
Setting a mood.
But, you know, the first one drew me in. The second one, not so much. But going to go see it, I, you know, yeah. It was definitely.
You know, I have to say, because you've heard me say this several times, I'm in marketing. You know, my day job is I work for a marketing agency. And I have to say, one of the things I respected about the movie, at the end of the movie, Eddie turned to me and said, well, what'd you think? And I just kind of sat there a little dumbfounded, like, well, it was exactly what they said it was going to be. There were some plot elements that aren't, you know, revealed in the trailers or the commercials on television, but tonally and in terms of the overall, I guess, plot progression, there was nothing that really jumped out as surprising or unexpected. I don't know that that's good or bad. It was usually you get marketing campaigns that sometimes, like you were mentioning, Eddie, can sell you on something that they're not actually making. And then this one, I thought, once you had seen the trailers and some of the clips that they posted to YouTube and whatnot, you know, you got a pretty good sense of how the movie was going to feel, and it totally landed exactly where they promised.
David, you know, what were your, like, before going in, because like I said, we've talked comics before and everything, so you're obviously a comic book guy. First impressions going into the film, what were you thinking? What were you hoping to see? What were you expecting?
So, I gotta be honest, going into the movie, I kept expectations very low and basically kind of went in like Corey, just kind of with like a blank slate. Wasn't really expecting much. I knew, although they kind of gave the impression it was going to be an Old Man Logan-esque, like we already talked about, they don't have the properties for that. So I knew not to expect anything like that. I was curious to see what they were going to do with X-23. But yeah, I kind of just went in with it because I figured if I go in with zero expectations, I can't be disappointed. And knowing, like we said, the track record of Fox with these properties, it was risky. So I just kind of went in and said, all right, let's see what it is for what it is.
Quick note, just kind of aside, what did you guys think of that Deadpool teaser? So mind you, this is going to be a spoiler-filled review, so we're not going to hold back. We're just going to kind of throw everything out there. Film's out. If you haven't seen it already, then, you know, you should go see it.
Shame on you.
But real quick, right at the get-go, so in case you didn't know, there was a Deadpool teaser that has that played in the beginning of Logan before the film starts. And mind you, it's already on the internet, so if you want to see it, you can check out YouTube. Find
even an extended version of it.
Yeah.
Internet.
So what did you guys think of that teaser?
Corey? It was definitely Deadpool.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Could you tell by the butt cheeks, or was it just, you know?
Yeah, it was good. I saw some people totally, you know, fanboying out over it. Some marks, some dirty, filthy marks out there were really happy with it, which that's fine. I'm not, like, so into Deadpool where that got me excited. I was going to go see it regardless. Mm. So this was cool. It was a little piece of bonus content. I liked a little nod to Cable on the phone booth. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Mm-hmm. Scott Summers or
Nathan Summers.
Nathan Summers.
Yeah. Wow. I thought you were the film philosopher. But yeah, I thought it was okay.
The Superman theme music really sold me while he's changing.
Yeah, that was
and the whole slow motion run to the phone booth and everything.
Yeah.
Well, and the whole fact that they did it at the beginning, you know, like we've been trained by this point to wait after the credits or during the credits now, even for some kind of a teaser scene. And here they completely reverse the flow and put the teaser scene before the movie.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was the beginning of the movie for the first.
Yeah, that's the way it
felt. And then I was like, wait. Deadpool's not in this. What is this?
If you haven't seen the extended one, too, the extended one's funny as well because the extended teaser actually has Stan Lee in it.
Yeah,
and it's
I saw that one too. Yeah,
yeah, because awesome. he finally hears the shot and he finally fixes himself up and he steps out of the booth and the Stan Lee's off to the side. He's like, "You look like what does he say?"
He just says, "Hey, nice costume."
Oh yeah, he says, "Hey, nice costume." He's like, "Shut up, Stan Lee." it's great. It's hilarious. And mind you, I agree with Corey. I don't think it really sold me on wanting to see the second film because obviously the second film is something that I'm already anticipating. And I think most people are already anticipating after seeing the first film. I mean, if you're a fan of the first film, you're already going to be anticipating the second one. This was just kind of fan service for, like you said, just the people who were looking for. There was a lot of people who were looking for Deadpool to actually show up in the Logan film. So, which I don't think that would have worked, but I don't know. Because did you guys see that little Instagram picture that was on, that they posted with, it was Ryan Reynolds Hugh Jackman and Pierce Brosnan.
No, I missed that one.
There was a little promo thing that was on Instagram a few weeks back, and everybody was like, "Oh my gosh, Deadpool's gonna be in Logan, or Pierce Brosnan's gonna be Cable, or whatever." Which would be really awkward. GoldenEye being in.
Yeah, that would be work. That'd be weird.
That wouldn't work.
So after the teaser, we obviously get the film going, and we are introduced into the world of Logan. And right at the get-go, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I really liked the somber tone that they started out with. It didn't seem like it was like, oh, you know, with Superman music playing or whatnot. It just, there was like a sense of reality right at the get-go. I mean, the guy's getting his car jacked and whatnot. And, you know, Logan comes out and he's trying to, you know, make peace or whatever. And he ends up...
Yeah, I mean, he's basically like a chauffeur, right? He drives a limo. Mm-hmm. And... just drives people around. He's older, weary, not in the best of health.
He reminded me a lot like of an old dog.
Yeah, really. That's like, a good description.
Yeah, no. Because
like even when he was trying to swing, like if you've ever seen an older dog who tries to like snap at people, they're not as quick and they're like,
right.
But you can tell the fight's still in them. He was like swinging and trying to do stuff, and he just seemed to be, you know, not at the level as he used to be.
He was just done.
Yeah.
He's over it.
Yeah, he's done fighting. He's done, you know, doing the whole saving the world kind of deal. He's just, I'm limo driver Logan, you know, kind of deal.
And I think that opening sequence for him, mostly for me, what it was, the purpose of it was less, I didn't see it so much as establishing his demeanor, which we already saw in the teasers. For me, it really felt like, no, for real, guys, this is an R-rated movie, because he actually used his claws in ways that he should have been using them all along, but you're trying to, you know, fit a certain rating and a certain audience for the other movies. So I thought that opening sequence was really an introduction to, no, we're going to actually show him using these claws for kind of what the character has always been known for.
Yeah.
And I think another, because I agree with that, another thing, though, that I think it really does kind of set the stage for is the state of Logan. You know, not so much the tone of the film, and obviously the R rating, because, you know, F-bombs everywhere, this, and that, and the violence, but it also sets the tone for his state in life. You know, obviously he's older, he's more, you know, frail. He's not frail as in like he's, you know, whatever, but I mean, there's even a point where one of his claws doesn't even come out all the way. And it's like, it reminds you like when you try to get out of bed and you're older and you're like, you know, kind of deal. That's what it seemed like to me for him. Like he was having trouble with like, you know, Metamucil and kind of do whatever, you know, the deal. But what about you, Corey? What did you think about that first opening?
I think I kind of am in line with Chad. It just set the tone for the whole thing. Like, I was not honestly expecting that. I knew it was going to be rated R, but it was definitely more graphic than Deadpool was.
Or yeah. True.
Maybe there was just a lot more of it. Like, I think Deadpool had like two or three decapitations. Like, this was Decapitation City. And then gratuitous boob shot, you know, at the beginning. Like, you knew it was an R-rated movie by the time it really kicked off after that first montage.
So throughout the film, as the film continues, we're introduced to Boyd Holbrook's character, which is the leader of the Reavers.
Donald Pierce.
Yeah. And he's, I kid you not, if I didn't know the information that I knew before, I would have thought, oh, he could have made a good Gambit just because of his accent and everything.
That's what it reminded me of.
It came to mind and I'm like, oh, that would have worked out. You know, I could have done with a little, you know, Cajun, you know, action over here, blah blah blah.
Yeah, I mean, he had that kind of like laconic sort of just slow draw going on.
Yeah, well, we get the introduction of him, and then obviously we are introduced to Stephen Merchant's role as Caliban,
That was an interesting inclusion in this story,
which uniquely enough, I don't know about you guys, but Stephen Merchant is normally a comedic actor. He's usually done a lot more lighter roles. There wasn't really anything in this film that he did that was really comedic, but it still worked. I mean, I'm not going to lie. He did a well enough job as Caliban, to my knowledge.
He was a much smarter Caliban than Caliban usually is. Caliban in the comics is not that clever.
No?
or, No, I mean, he's usually has more of a juvenile personality and other characters are taking care of him. Here, he's actually in a caretaker role while Logan goes out and drives his limousine, you know, executive car or whatever. Caliban stays back at this rundown, I don't even know, power plant? What was it?
That, some sort of factory or...
It's like a steel mill.
And, steel mill, yeah.
And watches over the nonagenarian, as in over 90 years old, Professor X.
Which we also are introduced to. And this isn't the normal peppy, more positive Professor X that we're used to in all the other films. This is a older, more... I almost want to say senile, but I don't want to say senile because he still has part of his mind there, yet there's also part of it that's not there. So he kind of goes in and out. Like when you meet him right away, he's spouting, like I would say, commercials that he's hearing maybe in his head or something. He's talking about dry tacos, 2-for-1. And I don't know.
Wheeling himself around.
And yeah, wheeling himself. Make way, sir, you know, kind of deal. And he's. So I actually thought he was super senile until he started talking to Logan. But this is a very unique portrayal for Professor X. This is a very unique way to present him in this film because I honestly don't think I've ever seen Patrick Stewart play something as frail as that. Like, usually he plays a very strong character. He's a very strong actor. He's a very strong presence on stage or in film or on TV. But to see him play somebody as frail as this, like, I truly believed Patrick Stewart is going to die.
I know
tomorrow.
You're like, you're feeling like, wait a minute, hold on. He is older.
Yeah.
You kind of realize it.
And it was weird hearing Professor X drop the F-bomb.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, so he's done too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's over it as well. Okay.
But the trio of these guys working together, obviously Caliban and Logan working to keep Professor X, I guess, kept in the beginning, you're thinking, oh, they're just helping him, you know, stay well and stay healthy, you know, and you know, then you get the introduction of Laura, which is X-23, or one of X-23. This is something that we actually talked about, because, so, in the comic books, X-23 is a mutant, not a group of mutants.
Right.
Right.
And so, this was something that Chad kind of was discussing with me. He's like, I don't know how they're going to do that. I don't know how that works. You have X-23 as a group of mutants as opposed to one singular mutant, and it kind of
really
muddles.
The one that you're with is the one that you're used to, in a way, the one that you're used to from the comics.
Well, I don't know if you know this too, because I caught that as well. And then when he was going through the files and he looked at her file, it's because each of them are X-23- and then a number, like their own number. So she was X-23-23. So I don't know if they kind of use that as an identifier, as this is the X-23. But because I picked up on that too, I was like, oh, that's a different take. Okay. Let's see where they're
so
going
it's
with
X-23-23.
Yeah.
Hey, whatever works, right?
I guess so. I mean, to me, I know we skip past a little bit of description of, I would say, for example, Professor Xavier, this is a version that you've never seen, like in the comics, in cartoon shows, in the other movies. This is a different Professor X. He was the most different than my expectation of him, of any of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, I would say X-23, Laura X-23, she was the highlight of the film for me. I thought that she, for as young as that performer is, I mean, she really nailed all the main notes that you needed from that character.
It really felt more of a, not Logan, but an X-23 origin story. Not a Logan movie.
Yeah, definitely.
That's how I
like a
it.
Passing the baton kind of a thing.
Although
she's not old enough yet to really take that and run with it, but on her own. But someday, could happen.
What about you, Corey? What did you think about X-23-23?
I thought she was really good, considering she didn't have like a line until almost halfway through the movie. She was able to portray all of the, you know, emotions and feelings that we needed to see from her at that time. So I thought she did a really good job. And the action was intense. Like, it was pretty incredible. it was kind of conflicting to see like an 8-year-old slicing people's heads off and cutting off their limbs. I don't know if I've seen that before. And then at the same time, it's like watching it as a viewer, you're like, well, you know, they're not going to really kick her ass too much because, you know, beating up children.
Yeah.
Right. So it was kind of good. I thought it was well executed. Did she have 3 claws?
She only had 2. She had 2.
Did she? Okay.
Two in the hands and then 1 in each foot.
Yeah, that's right. So they did keep that true to it.
She had a boot knife.
I like the introduction of how Krzysztof Soszynski was the guy with the big mohawk going in there, because I was like, oh, that's a UFC fighter, so it's probably going to be...
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, because you watch UFC. I'm like, that dude looks so familiar.
Yeah, he's a retired UFC fighter, and I expected there to be like an awesome action sequence. I was like, okay, now you got this guy who has done movies before, so I was like, okay, this is going to be dope. And then they just kind of made they kind of just threw him away, because you didn't even get to see his death. It was an off-camera death. You just see his head roll out of the...
Which, mind you, is part of the introduction for Laura, which was super surprising to me, because you just see this little girl after all these gunshots and all this noise and chaos going off camera in the room. You see her coming out and you see her walking to the group and you see something in her hands, and then she rolls it to the guy, Boyd, the metal Pierce, hand guy, yeah, whatever his name is.
Leader of the Reavers, yeah.
The leader of the Reavers.
Donald Pierce.
And it's that guy's head. And it's like, this little girl just... cut off this guy's head. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is a no-no for this little girl, you know. This is no bueno.
Yeah, you tell her no-no and see like, how well that goes.
No, but I felt like one here we kind of skipped over it, and this is one of the things, my gripes about the movie, and this is just movies in general. People need to just say what's happening. Like the nurse who was helping hand off the child to Logan, she didn't say one time, oh, by the way, she's a mutant. Which would have completely changed Logan's opinion and given him a whole different outlook on it. And, you know, actually he would have considered it. But they approached him as like, oh, we just need to, you need to get us to Canada. Please get us to Canada.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, we'll just put it off a day. Okay. Maybe at that point, you're like, okay, she's a freaking mutant and people are after us. Oh, well then you can come with me, you know, don't sit here in this hotel room.
Right.
Like. Just tell. And the same thing happened like in Batman v Superman when the Flash comes to Batman in the dream, and he's like, "Don't forget her," or he says something about her. Just
Lana or something.
You could have knocked out the whole thing in one sentence.
am I too early? Or am I too whatever? Yeah, I'm too early.
It's so dumb. Just say what you need to say. Like that's the suspension of disbelief that kills me sometimes in these Marvel movies. There's some that are worse than others. That was the only time that it really just kicked me in the face in this movie. Of come on, just and,
yeah, because there are numerous interactions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like she approaches him numerous times without telling him why she's doing it,
and it gets her killed. And if she really valued her life, she would have made that simple sentence. By the way, she's a mute.
And mind you, the time of this film. So we're looking at what is it like? 2 hours and 20 minutes. 2 hours and 20
Something
minutes.
Like that, yeah.
That's a good 20 minutes that could be whittled down. Because I agree, that does kind of lengthen the interaction between those two. If she would have said that at the graveyard, she's like, Logan, I know you're the Wolverine. Your daughter is with me. She's being chased by these bad people who want to kill her. We need you to take us somewhere to safety.
Yeah, after the first rejection, it should have just...
That took like 20 seconds right there.
Well, and that didn't even sound like that was the first rejection. It sounds like she was going after him for some time. Before we actually saw her, like before the movie started, this is an ongoing thing.
It's like I heard the Wolverine was in Phoenix or somewhere, someplace.
I think it was Texas, but yeah.
Either way, whatever.
I thought he was the film monster.
Yeah, I know. X-23-3.
You bring up a good point in terms of inconsistencies and drawn out things.
Well, here's another thing about that whole situation is that the audience already knows she's X-23. Mm-hmm. We all know.
Yeah,
we know she's a mutant. Before the movie came out, we're the target audience. Everyone there knows she's a mutant. Everyone knows except for Logan. So that whole hour, you know, why that reveal of her cutting the guy's head off wasn't for us. It wasn't. It wasn't really for the movie. It served no point because we all knew what was going to happen. The guy's not going to go in there and murder the kid in the first act.
Like because it's in every single teaser and trailer.
Yeah,
movie's over.
Yeah, so I don't know. I thought that was just a poor choice.
Well, and then another thing in terms of like inconsistencies. I know Chad had a little bit of a struggle with the idea. So as you see in the trailers, Logan finds a comic book in the film and then confronts, you know, the little girl and you know, Professor X with it as well. And you had a little bit of trouble with that because of the fact that it just didn't seem consistent with the whole...
What bothered me, I grew up reading X-Men comic books, so this is totally my wheelhouse. I will still love the movie even if I hate the movie because I'm that connected to the franchise. But one of the things that didn't make sense, because you also have to think about the internal consistency of the story. So if you're living in a world where mutants have basically been eradicated, which is the state that it's in the beginning, well, even by the end, the mutants are basically all gone and people are happy about that and they don't want any more to show up. Yet it's a world where the X-Men specifically have been turned into comic book heroic characters and there are action figures of them also in the movie. So to me, it was confusing. It was fun to see, but it was confusing in a world that vilifies and glorifies the mutants. Like it didn't really make a lot of sense to me. I know that they were using the comic book as a bit of a plot point, but still it was odd. And they had their, like, basically the costumes that you're used to have seen, you know, from the 80s 70s 80s and 90s, where they're brightly colored spandex and everything, which that's never been the case in the movies. In the movie versions, they've never had costumes like that. So it was an odd decision, I thought, to do that.
It was weird. It almost kind of felt like a cop-out on their part. It's like, okay, how are we going to get this? Let's throw in a comic book. You know, they'll think that's funny. It's a little Easter egg, like, we're breaking the fourth wall because it's a comic book about the characters that you're watching. It was just weird. Yeah, I mean, it was humorous when he opened it up and he goes, like, well, none of this happened this way. And
oh, it looks like we got an X-Men fan here.
Yeah, it was way more dangerous than this or whatever his comment was. But it wasn't worth it. They could have come up with something a lot more clever to have that plot point be in there.
What do you think, Corey?
Agreed.
I kind of disagree. I liked it. Yeah? And I could kind of see the justification. I mean, I imagine that some sort of fiction would be out there for the mutants and that, like in the comics and stuff, I haven't seen like Apocalypse or last thing I saw was First Class, which really put a bad taste in my mouth. But you know, it's always been where there's like anti-mutant people and then pro-mutant people, and so I imagine that there was a large amount of the American population that would have been into X-Men comic books, but I see both sides of the coin where it is just kind of gimmicky.
And one of the big things that stands out, I don't know if you guys know, but a lot of the film utilized like a ton of CGI, and not just the obvious scenes, but even in certain scenes. So a video was released today an article was released today that talked about how much CGI was actually used that people didn't even realize. There was like actual CGI used for Logan's hair. Like his hair was CGI in some of the scenes. In some of the driving scenes also, it was also CGI. It wasn't actually Hugh Jackman in the driver's seat. There was actually a guy who was there with the mocap dots and whatnot, and they CGI'd Hugh Jackman's face on it. Also with the little girl, Laura, a lot of her features were CGI'd to make her look similar to Logan so that she has a little bit more of a resemblance towards, you know, James Howlett or Logan, as opposed to just her by herself, which I can admire the work that's put into it, but I don't know if it was really all necessary.
She didn't look that close.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it was worth it. I mean, I just pulled up a picture of her on IMDb, and she didn't look any different to me on IMDb than she did in the movie.
I didn't see it as a distraction. I'm kind of impressed that they snuck that much in there because I didn't notice it. I mean, you can throw as much CGI in a movie as you want, as long as it's not distracting, like Star Wars. Like Star Wars CGI was on a whole nother level of just like poorly made cop out, like it's taking you completely out of the movie. But you could sneak in whatever the hell you want as long as it's kind of sneaky. I thought they did a really good job because that was all news to me.
I mean, the driving scenes make sense because you're not going to have Hugh Jackman doing those stunts. So it kind of makes sense, and it's kind of clever that they, instead of just having it be a stunt driver and not showing him in there, that they went as far as doing CGI and CGI his face on the stunt driver. So that's, you know, that's a pretty cool way of doing it.
Do you think, though, kind of like what Corey was saying, do you think it was really necessary, though? Like, in now that you know, obviously, knowing is kind of your kind of bad thing now, because then you're going to be looking for it next time you see it or whatever. But do you think it was necessary? Do you think it should have been, like, in terms of, like, monetary wise, do you think they should have put money towards, oh, we should put this much towards CGI so that we can make this work?
Yeah, it's an interesting decision. I mean, to hear after the fact that they put that amount of money and time and detail into it is, I don't really know that it makes it better or worse. It's an interesting choice to have done it that way. And I know that there are other movies that do that too with their stunt performers nowadays. That's one of the main gripes you get with films that have big stunts or a lot of CGI is, well, you can tell when it's the actor and when it's not. So a lot of production studios actually do small touches like that to make it look more authentic. So that you don't notice the difference between the stunt performer and the main, you know, character actor.
And speaking of CGI, so we get to about the middle of the movie. Obviously, according to the trailers and whatnot, it's no news to anybody. Professor Xavier and Logan take Laura and they're running, you know, and they're trying to get to this Eden of sorts, and they end up stopping with some, you know, family whom they help and whatnot, and there's a scene in there where we're introduced to the new, you know, villain of sorts, I guess, where Professor Xavier. So here's one part that I want to kind of talk about. Professor Xavier's scene while he's in bed.
Mm.
Now, I know that kind of sounds a little funky, but Professor Xavier is talking about how the day went and whatnot. There's three things in this scene that I want to talk about. First off, did anybody really kind of like the idea in terms of changing the focus from Old Man Logan, the comic, is, you know, his kind of passion, his drive is because of what he did to the X-Men. In this film, it's revealed that Professor Xavier actually has some sort of epilepsy. He has seizures, and because of that, his brain kind of goes all wonky and causes people to pretty much stay in like a state of paralysis or something, and apparently it caused the death of 7 students while he was at the school. Do you guys actually like the change, the shift, the movement from it being Wolverine's reason for kind of going into exile as opposed to, you know, now it's the professor's reason why they have to hide him because of, you know, what he did?
It kind of makes sense because in Old Man Logan, there's kind of like a pacifism angle.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was assumed that Wolverine wasn't popping his claws because he swore it off because what he'd done with his own hands. And in this movie, he's basically just swinging around like before. Like it wasn't holding him back at all. So it didn't seem like that regret would have added to his plot at all. And again, this is not Old Man Logan. 100% it's not. So I like the switch. I mean, they had to justify getting rid of mutants.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was probably the next best way to do it, was just have it on Professor X and then kind of go to the angle of, well, he did that, but Logan still cares enough to take care of him. So he's kind of he's kind of looked at as a villain to Professor X throughout mm-hmm. the movie, you know, keeping him sedated and stuff. And Logan just kind of has to deal with that. You know, the person he respects and loves probably the most is habitually mad at him, but at the same time, he's losing his mind. And anybody who's gone through that with like a parent or a grandparent has seen degenerative brain diseases. You really kind of hit you in the feels. Like, you have to have been in that situation, I think, to fully understand when you have someone you love who is losing their mind and they kind of see you as the villain, and, you know, you just know you're doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. But as an audience, it was kind of like, well, why is he sedating him? You know, we didn't understand. And then throughout the movie, you find out, well, because he did this really terrible thing, you know, that was beyond his control.
What about you, Webb? What do you think?
Yeah, same thing. I think, you know, given that they had to change it up a bit, you know, for doing the story that they needed to do. I think that made sense. My only issue with it is I wish we kind of would have known more. Like Corey and I were talking about this after the movie, some sort of flashback or something to kind of give us a better idea of like what happened. Like we can kind of infer based on, you know, throughout the movie, we see him having these episodes, and there's one scene where they're in a casino where he basically paralyzes everybody within like a pretty large radius. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we can kind of, understand what happened, but to kind of get a better picture, and then to find that out right before what happened, it was a little like, I wanted to know more scenario.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen that scene play out. I think of all the stuff, that's one thing they probably should have CGI'd. If they couldn't get Halle Berry and all them to come back to do a death scene, like just
yes.
doing like something to like let those characters die on screen and make it more real instead of having us piece everything together, because we wouldn't have known. You know, we saw what happened at Vegas, and then like the very next scene as they're driving off, there's radio, you know, explaining what just happened. And they say, oh, it's pretty much just like what happened.
Yeah,
you
the
know?
Westchester yeah. incident.
Yeah, where all this stuff happened. But, you know, so at that point we know, Professor X did it. Again, another reveal in the movie that was for nobody but the characters. They're kind of showing the characters things that we had already known for about 30 minutes.
And what's weird, too, is later on in the film, like actually at pretty much at the very end, we get another explanation for why the mutants are gone. So that kind of got conflicting.
That's right. What was it?
It was, what's his name? Rice.
Dr. Xander Rice.
Xander Rice, who's the son of, what's his name? Rice, who did the experiments on Wolverine. Xander Rice is responsible for the X-23 and X-24 projects. And we hear that he's the reason why mutants are gone. And it's like, well, wait, that conflicts with what we learned an hour ago, that Professor X is the reason for some of the mutants being, it was just kind of a weird scenario.
Yeah. There's a lot of in writing terms, things that you call the subtext of why the characters are doing what they're doing that gets partially explained, but not to a satisfying level in the movie. It's like they're still teasing you. They're letting you know just enough to become interested, but then not paying off that level of interest.
And I think that's kind of where, like, and it's kind of unfortunate that they don't think of this, but people like us, we're familiar with the characters, we're familiar with the story, and we're going into it, we're not just going into it blind like some people might be. Mm-hmm. So people who are going into it blind may not know stuff like this, but we're kind of like, we're coming at it from a more in-depth angle, and it's unfortunate that we're the ones that are left going, well, wait, hang on, what happened? Why are you doing it this way? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I hear what you were saying in terms of, you know, seeing just something that really, going back to the scene where you find out what happens at the Westchester incident. But I feel like not going back kind of leaves it to our imagination, kind of leaves it to like, okay, well, this is what happened. The focus is not on the brutality of these people, these kids, which you were mentioning earlier about Laura. You know, nobody wants to see these people, you know, kicking this little girl all over the place and beating her down. I think kind of the similar mindset is for like, oh, well, we didn't really want to focus on that, because who wants to see a bunch of kids slowly die because of something that somebody like Professor X, who loves these kids, is causing. You know, I think going back and doing that kind of takes away from the whole drive of that whole moment in the film. For me personally, I feel.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, to kind of get back at what you were originally asking, there is this this very interesting kind of quiet, in many ways, scene in the farmhouse. So, Logan, Professor X, and Laura, they've been trying to escape. They witness basically a dramatic car accident, and they help a family get back to their home, and then the family insists that they stay for dinner and you know, whatnot. And so that night, Professor X kind of has his first opportunity to sleep in a real bed, in a real house, like for the first time in years. And he has this quiet, heartfelt moment with who he believes to be Logan, who has returned from helping the owner of the home solve some kind of a water dispute with a large farming co-op that, you know, that is not being very friendly with the land and the water use. Yeah. But so he thinks Logan comes back and he has this, you know, this quiet, heartfelt moment. I thought the Professor X character was the most compelling kind of holistically in the movie. He's not in the entire movie, but you see him go from kind of really crazy when you first meet him. Like, he sounds crazy, he behaves crazy, and then here you have this very lucid, self-reflective moment. Unfortunately, he's not talking to Logan. He's talking to some other creation of this government group that has it out for him. So, you know, it kind of gets cut short when you find out that it's actually this X-24 entity that looks like a young Wolverine.
That was probably the best swerve of the movie, though, because he had that moment where he realized, like, he's saying, this is the best day I've ever had, you know, because they had dinner and he's laughing and, you know, there's a family and he got to feel normal. And then in that clarity, it also unfortunately brings back the memory of whatever he had done. And so just as he realizes it, and he's starting to kind of break down and cry, like, and my thought was that he realized it. Now he's going to, like, break down and then just completely screw up the whole family. Like, I thought he was going to go into another episode after realizing what he had actually done. And then, you know, he catches some Wolverine blades to the chest.
Yeah.
And we don't at that point know that it's X-24. We think Logan, I did. It fooled me. I was like, oh, wow, Logan, I mean, maybe you should have let him process that. Like, maybe he... You know, I thought it was a big swerve. It caught
like
me.
Like a mercy killing kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then you learn that it's not Logan.
So this X-24 actually looks exactly like Hugh Jackman. It's a pretty much a clean copy of his younger self. Did you guys like the idea of the switch? Obviously, Corey did, but did you guys like the idea of the switch going from the focus of this group of Reavers and this doctor going after this little girl to now, oh, by the way, now we got this CGI copy of Hugh Jackman chasing after old man Hugh Jackman and these kids now.
It was a good twist, and I think it kind of brought to, I mean, it kind of symbolized his internal struggle with who he was, and now he's trying to give this up, and he's kind of forced back into this, and you know, because he's dealt with, he's done things that he's probably not particularly proud of, and he's kind of dealing with that in his own way, and then through X-24 he's kind of being forced back to face it head on. But it was definitely an interesting twist just in itself, having this other Wolverine, a more savage Wolverine at play that it's really kind of uncontrollable. I mean, we saw him, you know, and, you know, after he catches, you know, after he kills Professor X, there's a huge fight scene and Dr. Rice is trying to get him under control and he's basically not listening. So it kind of has that.
Pretty much like, a child.
He's basically a child, yeah, which, I mean, ultimately he's a clone, so he probably is the age of a child. But yeah, it was, you know, it was kind of threw a wrench into it.
It was okay. I mean, he was the only thing in the movie that was a threat, I felt.
Yeah.
Because the main dude, Boyd, or who was Pierce, I was never at any point thought he was a risk.
No.
He was kind of like the main bad guy, but he didn't do anything cool. He, you know, just kind of commanded other people to do stuff. Like, at no point did I think, oh, wow, he's going to get down to business.
Sure.
He's going to do something. Wolverine could have just stabbed him in the chest at any time. And then even the way he died was pretty anticlimactic.
Talking about Boyd?
Yeah. So what else was there besides Boyd? There was the scientist who he wasn't going to do anything. And then the fact that all they could come up with was a doppelganger. It was cool for that swerve. But other than that, I would have much rather seen them, you know, pull one last awesome property that they haven't used yet from the X-Men database than just come up with a clone.
Yeah, I was actually waiting for some kind of Omega Red.
Omega Red is exactly what I was thinking.
I thought, oh, well, so now that the kids are loose and Wolverine is in play, they should totally have Omega Red, and then it ended up being this X-24 that is nothing like Omega Red.
But during the movie, that's what I was waiting right before for. I started my tangent, I thought in my head Omega Red would have been the perfect villain to shoehorn in there.
What about you, Webb? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it was a good twist, but yeah, I think they could have saved on the CGI hair money and put that into a different property.
Well, obviously that's towards the tail end of the film, or towards the second half of the film, and
this is a long movie.
It really was.
And because of the tone, you feel the length of the movie.
Because they're just these stop and goes in terms of just
it's
time,
not like
and
action.
But I'm not gonna lie. I actually teared a little the first time when Logan's burying Professor Xavier. I mean, come on. Let's be honest. Who here kind of teared up a bit when he's trying, and he's laying him down on the ground. He's like, you're near the water, you know?
I didn't get that. I didn't get sad at any point during the movie.
You guys are cold. Just cold.
Maybe when the nurse died, I was like a little sad. At the very beginning. Because I was like, that was avoidable. Logan,
it's all your fault.
This is on you. Yeah. This is on you.
And her, too, because she should have told him. Really, it was a mutant.
Right away, just say it.
And okay, so another suspension of disbelief moment. I said there was only one, but there's two. Uh-oh. The cell phone video that he got all the information from.
Yeah.
Which was super professionally edited.
So Hollywood produced. Like, it was so good how she got those camera angles on herself sometimes.
I'm like, I need to get the app that she has so we can just do all our video work on a cell phone instead.
Yeah. And some of those shots weren't even sly. Like, the one where the doctor is talking to another nurse, and she's just straight up sitting there outside of the door and just filming him. And it's like, how is this not...
a secret government facility, very highly monitored... But they didn't notice.
They didn't take your cell phone away?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I would have rather seen flashbacks, maybe.
And
he's going through the files, and then they're flashing to these things that had happened as he's reading.
Like, it's documentation, and it's like, oh, this is what happened and whatnot.
I know how loud those cell phones get. And he's in a car of sleeping people trying to be sly, watching this video with the audio blasted. Like, they're waking up.
Of course, a better solution would have been to just not have her die. And tell him all of this herself, and then we would have been able to skip this whole
going back to Corey.
Cell phone
saved us about 45 minutes in the movie.
So the overall story: Logan ends up taking Laura by himself to this Eden of sorts, where they're meeting with other.
Takes her.
You're right. Actually, I take that back. This little girl somehow can reach the pedals and drive like a professional. Apparently, who's never been outside of a complex and has been apparently in the back seat of a car all this time, she drives expertly with Logan passed out in the, you know, passenger seat.
Hey, you do what you gotta do.
She's a trained assassin. If she can kill somebody, she can drive a car.
She's extending that little toe claw to hit the little guy.
That's exactly what was happening. They just couldn't afford the CGI for that.
Yeah, well, all the hair.
All the hair CGI.
So... They go, they finally get to Eden. Logan's obviously, you know, trying to heal up because apparently the adamantium in his body is poisoning him. Spoiler alert. They don't say it outright, but obviously you get the gist.
They eventually do. The doctor does essentially say, something's poisoning you from the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his healing factor isn't keeping up with it anymore.
Yeah. So he's totally jacked up and dying pretty much. So they get him there. He gets... put into a bed. He's given this formula that the kids are given back.
Yeah, all the other kids have made it, but none of their caretakers have made it. That was odd to me, too.
A little strange.
All the kids made it, but none of the adults made it.
It totally turned into Hook at that point.
That's exactly what I said. I said that.
You just said because of the little round
the main
American kid. That's what you were thinking.
No.
I'm like, I saw that
totally
kid run.
Rufio.
Richter.
Yeah, they had their own Rufio, who was the leader. And then
that little round kid that could pick up his feet and roll like a ball.
Yeah.
It's a little electric ball or something.
It was the X-Men version of Hook from that point forward.
Absolutely.
And Wolverine was Peter Pan.
That's right.
So
very weird, twisted Peter Pan.
No mistake about that.
So the point of this film, they're giving him this stuff. He's healing because of the medicine that they're giving him, which they have to give him in small doses because apparently if you give him too much, they make him go crazy. They end up leaving because he does the whole, you know, hey, I'm not fit to be your dad. I just, stuff dies around me. And so they go, they leave.
That's the best part of the movie.
Which part?
The part where he has that last talk with Laura X-23, and he's like, people around me who I care about die. She said, well, then I guess I'll be okay.
I got
okay.
nothing to worry about.
Yeah, I got nothing to worry about.
Damn.
My wife looked at me, and she's like,
yeah.
Damn, girl. She got jokes. She had the clap back.
Yeah. She did. And so the kids end up leaving. They leave a little vial of this stuff so he can keep getting better. And then he recognizes the drones that are coming. Obviously, they spotted the kids. They're all going to, you know, the team of Reavers and Dr. Xander Rice and the Hugh Jackman lookalike, they all go after the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so at this point, Logan decides, well, he's going to go and do something. He's going to go and, you know, take care of business. So he takes the needle and whatnot, and they go down there. I think that has to be one of the most epic fight scenes for the Wolverine in pretty much most of all the 17 years he's been doing it. He goes total like rabid and crazy, and he takes a full dose of that medicine and just starts slicing people up left and right. I mean, am I the only one that thought that was a pretty sick scene?
It was a Wolverine fight scene. It was a Wolverine fight scene that we weren't able to see before because of the PG-13 rating, and now we have our R-rated rating, and it's like this is how he fights in the comics.
Yeah,
this is how he takes people out, and we weren't able to see that. So yeah, it was cool being able to see that in like live action.
Yeah, for like the 4 minutes that it lasted. Yeah.
Until true.
The medicine wiped off way too fast.
And then he turned into my dad after Christmas.
Pretty much, yeah.
Like seriously, I've seen the man eat. So that whole scene, that whole sequence leads up to the ultimate fight scene, which is, you know, X-24 fighting Wolverine, and they're going back and forth, slicing each other. They're going, you know, cutting each other up, and then finally the kids start stepping in, which in my mind, you would have figured like the kids would have like drawn a line and just started using their powers against these people instantly when they started coming at them, which that
versus
little
continuing to run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It which, definitely seemed like X-23 was the best trained, because out the gate, she's just sliding people down, but the rest of these guys are like, well, I guess I kind of have powers.
And yeah.
They have to be really encouraged to use them. They must not have been in the same program or something, because they were not as trained as her.
They were X-22s.
They were they were last year's models.
Yeah.
So the scene goes on. X-24 ends up throwing Logan into a tree trunk. So we're getting right to that point. He throws him right into a tree trunk. He's got a big old tree trunk.
He gets impaled.
Yeah, right in the center of his chest. And right before he's going to pretty much claw off his head or do something, Logan, who had an adamantium bullet in his pocket for contemplation.
Yeah,
because
the whole time he's kind of like, he was basically being a limo driver to save up enough money to buy a small boat and like sail out into the ocean and use this adamantium bullet on himself.
Yeah.
But then he kind of changes his mind a little bit near the end, and X-23 steals it anyway.
And she just, the convenience of it all, puts it in a gun, finds a gun that actually the bullet fits into, ironically enough, and then pulls the hammer back and just like that blows X-24's head off. So we get to the end. Obviously, this is the scene that everybody is anticipating to see. Logan's dying. Finally, he's actually going to die. The first time I saw it, I cried. I'm not going to lie. I'm an emotional guy. Don't hate on that.
Yeah, like a little sissy.
And?
Emotional.
Yeah.
I lost those a long time ago, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
X-24 over here. But anyway, so we get those moments where he's telling Laura, he's like, you know, oh, this is it. This, you know, the whole sequence where he's saying his goodbyes and ultimately leading to him finally releasing all his guilt and whatnot. I mean, you actually see the Wolverine smile right at the end, right before he passes. And so the unique thing about that scene is when they're burying him and Laura, who apparently has this incredible memory, she actually remembers a line from a movie that her and Professor Xavier had
watched
seen
in the hotel, right?
Yeah,
at the casino,
right before this huge traumatic thing happened, and you know
now
convulsing.
She's quoting Shane.
Now she's quoting this movie, and I think that kind of took me out a bit of that moment. I don't know about you guys, but just because I didn't understand. Like, I get the quote, and I get she's, like, just trying to reference something that she remembers, but it just didn't seem to really connect the dots for me.
It didn't bother me that much, just because, realistically speaking, that was, like, what, 2 days prior? It wasn't that long before that happened. And again, she's a like trained, like enhanced individual, so she's got to have some sort of memory, you know, retention.
I feel like there's more to it than even that, because she had a fascination with like Westerns from the very beginning. Like anytime she saw a cowboy hat or anything, she would stop. You know, she had like cowgirl boots on or something like that. So, and I think that was the first Western movie she'd ever gotten to see when she was on the bed with Professor Xavier. So she's probably hyper-focused and paying attention and really just absorbing the stuff. I'm just playing devil's advocate. I don't care. It didn't bother me. It didn't take me out of it. But the justification of that could be made that, you know, she was obsessed with Western culture. And so she could easily remember
a Wolverine movie. A big commentary on Wolverine's entire lifestyle. You know, like once you've taken a life, you can't go back.
Yeah.
It changes you. You know, like it was not only in a way reflective of her experience over the course of the movie and beforehand, but it was really a commentary on his entire existence.
Yeah.
Well, do you guys see a future for this particular character in other movies like X-23, Laura? Do you guys actually think there's a possibility of them continuing?
God, I hope not.
Really?
Just end it. Just end it and go back to Marvel. I just want Marvel Studios to have it and take it and fix it and make it all better. This is a good way to end. You end on a high note. And this is definitely by far, in my opinion, the best X-Men movie they've produced. Whether it's X-Men, Wolverine. That's tough. Because I like Deadpool, but it's right up there with Deadpool for me. I thought they're just both good. They're entertaining, which is something I don't think any of the other X-Men movies have been. So I think they should just end it on the high and then – or reboot the whole thing with more creative people.
What do you think, Will?
Do I want to see it? No. Do I think we're going to? Absolutely, because that's how Fox does it. They're going to – keep making these movies, if anything, to just hold on to the X-Men property.
But what do they do? Like, everyone we care about, all the X-Men that'll sell toys are dead. So all they have is X-23. What are they going to do? Are they just going to, you know, all these other kids who grew up who are just kind of like random mutant A and random mutant B? I don't think they can carry a franchise. You need Iceman. You need everybody. You need Magneto, Kitty Pryde. Like, you just need those characters.
Well, I don't know that this was necessarily positioned as the next step in the overall franchise. I think this was the final step of Logan's story.
Yeah.
It was clearly in a different version of the universe than any of the multiple ones that we've seen so far. It seemed to be set in a very different type of world. Doesn't mean they can't continue the story of the kids. I would have felt very differently if they had used Omega Red and he was still in pursuit of them by the end of the movie. Then I'd be like, oh, we need to keep going with this guy. This guy's hardcore. He's interesting. Here, I think it's a fine ending, and there's no need to do anything more with the story. It was meant to be an ending for Hugh Jackman as Wolverine and Patrick Stewart as Professor Xavier. Let it be what it is. Don't push it further. They've already got something in Deadpool that might expand into other connected properties.
Are there other X-Men movies, like, even in the works that people are talking about?
Yeah, they've got a New Mutants in pre-production, and they have an X-Force in early pre-production stage in addition to Deadpool 2. And allegedly they're doing a follow-up to Apocalypse. They're allegedly filming it this summer for a release next year with the young Jean Grey, young Cyclops, young Nightcrawler, all of those characters. So we'll see how that goes. Now, they're two different points in the timeline and or could be two different timelines altogether, two different universes once they kind of hit Days of Future Past.
Good luck explaining that, you know, to all the old people that go see these movies. Fractured all kinds of things,
yeah.
That's the thing about alternate universes. They're cool for me and you who are used to that type of thing, who we've seen every different version of a character and we could justify, oh, it was a different universe.
Sure.
But to grandma and to my mom and to everybody else who's going to go see this,
did you really say to your grandma?
Yeah, my grandma will go see this.
Huh.
So, like, now when I go see any of those other movies, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, you're all going to die because Professor X is going to kill you. That's it. Whatever happens at the end of this movie doesn't matter because I know how you're gonna die.
Nope. So, it's an alternate timeline.
Nope.
There you go. Well, final impressions, guys. We're gonna go ahead and just bring it back around. Oh my gosh. How many monocles does it pass or fail? And you guys, however you guys do your ratings, I know you guys on Video Game Bang do your ratings differently, but Chad, real quick, how do you do your rating?
I do my rating with monocles, and I will give this one, I give it a solid 3. I wanted it to wow me, and it wasn't that kind of movie. I thought it was a very solidly done story, solidly done performance, but there was nothing that really sparkled, I guess. I don't, that's a weird word to say with regard to Logan or any of it, but there was just nothing that jumped out as, oh, that was a really special moment. It was good. It was very solidly good, so I'll give it a 3.
I give it a 4 monocles out of 5. It does pass for me. I liked it. It just, there are certain little things here and there that kind of were, you know, a little disconcerting. But other than that, I give it a good 4 out of 5. What about you, David?
Yeah, I'd give it 4 out of 5. You know, there were like you said, there were little things that kind of took you out of the movie. But overall, it was really well done. And they used what they had in a very good way.
Corey?
I don't use monocles. Oh, boy. I use pizzas. And pizzas. Out of 5 pizzas, I'd give it 4. And it sounds kind of like a cop-out, though, because you guys said 4, and I'm saying 4. But I thought it was a good movie.
I said 3, which is highly ironic. I'm usually the high guy and not the low guy.
I was surprised you gave it only 3. I liked it. I think for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, well, you've just gotten all the spoilers, so you know it's not Old Man Logan. Don't go in there thinking it's going to be Old Man Logan, and then you'll be just fine. If I had to compare the graphic novel to the movie, the graphic novel kicks the movie's ass 10 times over. You know, you have a symbiote Tyrannosaurus Rex running around. You get, you know, hammer falls, like all those iconic imagery that you see of the fallen characters. And the story is just so much better. So if you have the money in your pocket, if you have $20, go buy the graphic novel. No, see the movie.
There you go. Well, that about wraps up another awesome show. Before we go, though, we do want to say a quick thank you. We've been actually creating this content, this show, for the last year. We have 52 shows in the can, and this is our 53rd one. So you know what? We're excited to hit that one-year mark. And as the Filmlosophers, it's been an awesome journey these past 12 months, from exciting conversations to experiencing San Diego Comic-Con. So, you know, we're truly blessed and honored to have gone for so long and keep on ticking. Corey actually had once told us that when we were first starting this show, that if we made it to episode 7, that we were going to be okay. So that kind of set up an imaginary goal for us, and we hit it. And you know what? After we hit it, we were like, all right, we're in the clear. We can keep on ticking. So we want to thank Corey. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to be a part of this show and helping us, you know, guiding us along and just being that, you know, example for us because of the fact that you guys have such a successful show. So thank you. And thank you, Mr. Chad Riley, for being by my side and doing this with me, not as, you know, a secondary, but actually in the driver's seat as well. And making this as much as possible.
So much fun.
Exactly. So you know what? Of course, like we always do, we're going to go ahead and head out. But guys, thanks again for showing up. Corey, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at What's Up Pizzas. And you can check us all out on VGBstudios.com, where we do the Video Game Bang podcast with myself, David Webb here, Aaron Carter, and Ivy Doomkitty.
And Mr. Webb.
You can find me on Twitter at RealDavidWeb and also on VGBstudios.com.
Well, we had an awesome conversation, and guys, again, thank you so much. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Corey.
I'm David.
Class dismissed.